Oh, you canny shove your granny off the bus. No, you canny shove your granny off the bus. No, you canny shove your granny, for she's your mammy's mammy. No, you canny shove your granny off the bus. There you go.
Dit is Comedy Geek, aflevering 37. Hey en welkom allemaal bij aflevering 37 van Comedy Geek. Vandaag te gast Maureen Younger. Maureen is een Engelse stand-up comedienne en ze is ook actrice. En ze heeft van allerlei dingen gedaan en we hebben het er allemaal uitgebreid over in het gesprek. Het is een vrouw vol met absurde verhalen, dus ik zou zeggen ga lekker zitten of wat het ook is wat je doet. Als je deze podcast aan het luisteren bent, misschien ben je wel aan het fietsen, aan het lopen, whatever. Maar geniet ervan, chill lekker en veel plezier met aflevering 37 van Comedy Geek met Maureen Younger.
Ich vergesse nicht mehr, was soll es bedeuten, dass ich so traurig bin? Ist er Leine Heine? Heinrich Heine?
Yeah,
it's a very famous German poet.
I went to school with him.
you're very good for your age.
Yeah, he's the guy with the arms, right?
Yeah, he had two arms. That's very good.
Yeah, I remember him. He was a funny bloke.
I misquoted it at the beginning, but anyway. Was soll es bedeuten, dass ich so traurig bin? That's it, right? Okay.
Cool. So Maureen, how are you?
I'm fine, thank
with
you.
With the apple juice.
Yes, slangeva.
Slangeva. Ah.
Very nice apple juice, actually.
Yeah, it is. What do you like about this apple juice?
I haven't paid for it. That's always very good.
Yeah. You sure you're not Dutch?
No, my family is Scottish. I think there's similarities there. Between.
Yeah, I think.
Are the Dutch meant to be quite mean? Is that the...
I don't know, but is the part... You are going to beat me up at one point.
Being yeah, that's
Scottish,
true.
Yeah. We're going to drink. Oh, no, that's
yeah,
Irish.
I don't really drink. Yeah. The Irish do, yeah. Yeah. Because you know what Cayley is?
Cayley
is like it's like a party, but you have it in Scotland and Ireland. And this Irish people came to a Scottish Cayley.
Uh-huh.
And they said it was very similar, apart from the fighting, because we didn't have any fighting at the end.
So, but tell me something about you. Why did you come here?
Apart from getting to be interviewed by you, which obviously was the main attraction.
Yeah, I can reckon.
I was asked. Ooh, and so when people tend to ask me to do gigs, I tend to say yes.
Oh. Oh, yeah. You're that kind of girl.
Yeah. Very, very hard to get. So, and I had a really good time last time I was here. So
you wanted to say last tip.
I didn't. You might want me to say last hit, but last time I was here, I speak very fast. Am I speaking too fast?
No. Yeah, I'm slowing you down with this machine.
Okay, that's great.
A special marine slowinator.
If you could do that when I'm on stage, I'd probably get more laughs.
Okay, you were asked, but what kind of affection do you have with Holland?
Well, I came here a couple of months ago, and I did. I did a gig here at Tivoli and it went really, really well and the Dutch laughed and I always like audiences who laugh at me when I'm on stage. And so I thought I'd come back and that's it really. Because I'd gigged quite a bit in Belgium but I'd never gigged in Holland before, or the Netherlands before, it was the first time.
But why did you start gigging abroad?
I just thought it'd be interesting. I've lived abroad a lot and I speak languages abroad. I speak about 5 languages and also gig in German. So I've got a Viennese accent. I went to Vienna University, so I sound Viennese, which really freaks Germans out because they can't quite... They often think I'm Austrian.
Yeah.
So when they go on stage and they say Maureen Younger from London, A, they expect my German to be rubbish because I'm British and I have a very strong English accent, but I actually sound I'm from Vienna. There's a particular type of accent. It's very southern. And so that kind of very... So I can get cheap laughs in Germany by just saying an Austrian word and they just have hysterics. I go, this is Anna Galdi, and they just, you know, kill themselves laughing. So it's, I love
mind fucking them.
Yeah. So I like gigging abroad and living abroad. So I just enjoy it because I lived in my life, I've lived in Moscow, Kiev, Mallorca, Paris, Vienna, Berlin, Frankfurt, and various towns and villages and around town.
My God, woman. Don't you like settling down?
Well, I have been in London now since the 90s. So I have settled down quite a bit. But obviously, as a comic, as you know, you travel around all the time. Yeah. So you're always travelling.
Yeah.
So I'm in Berlin. Next weekend, I'm in Berlin doing my own show, doing two shows over there, my own one-hour show. I'm doing an Edinburgh preview of my show, which is about me being the Britain's only London Scottish, Austrian German-speaking, black lesbian on the circuit, despite being white and straight.
Yeah, I was going to mention that for the listeners going like, black lesbian? Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Because I don't want to burst your bubble now, but you're not black.
I know, but I do a lot of gigs on the black circuit. So I'm probably the only white woman that does the black circuit in Britain.
The black circuit? Is that really a thing still?
Yeah, definitely. I've played to... The biggest audiences I've played to are 1,500, and that's been on the black circuit in Croydon and Hackney Empire. And it is quite funny because I wasn't on the... I was a support act. And the guy is a DJ that is like the biggest black station in London. He's the DJ there as well. So they obviously don't expect a white woman. And I'm obviously slightly older. I'm not as a young spring chicken.
Girl, I won't give you a year pass.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, honey. So they don't expect somebody like me to walk on stage. And it's hilarious because you see their faces going, oh, my God, what the fuck is this? So you can swear it's Holland, we're fine. And
dude, it's my own podcast. We can do whatever the fuck we want.
And
I'm naked right now.
Yeah, I noticed.
Mm-hmm.
Very impressed. Now
I know.
And so it's quite funny seeing their reactions when they kind of go, "What the fuck?" You know, because they just don't expect a white woman on the stage. And then just seeing the reaction because when I start doing my set, so yeah, it's quite a big circuit. Obviously in the major cities, so it's mainly in London and Birmingham and places like that.
But how did you get into that circuit?
Basically, it was a black female comic called Annette Fagan, and she gigged with me, and she thought you should be doing the black circuit. And for me, it kind of fits because I grew up in a part of London which was mainly black. So I went to a school which is what my show's about. I went to a school where I was about the only white girl in the school. So until 18, all my friends were black. So I never met, because my family is Scottish, I never met a white English person until I was 18 and went to university. So for me, particularly if I perform in front of black people of my age, it's like performing in front of people I grew up with.
Yeah.
So for me, going in front of middle-class white people, that's strange because that's what I've less got in common with.
But is it the type of humour, is that so different?
I think so. On the black circuit, there's certain stuff that you probably wouldn't do that you could do on the mainstream. Mainstream is what the black act comics call the, I suppose, the white circuit. Mm-hmm. There's certain material that you can't probably do in general terms. Because, you know, a lot of people confuse, like, British black comedy with American black comedy. Like, you know, and it's completely different. So a lot of West Indians and Africans, they've grown up in quite Christian backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't tend to swear. I don't tend to swear on the black circuit. I tend to mind my language. And there's certain material that you couldn't do.
Chimney cricket.
No, I don't speak like that. But I wouldn't swear. I don't really swear. There's certain jokes I probably wouldn't do because they wouldn't find it funny or it wouldn't go down that well. And also, you know, like if you did anti-God stuff, I mean, I don't, but, you know, you've got people there who go to church on Sundays, which you probably wouldn't have at a mainstream comedy club. And so I think if you did anti-God stuff, if you did, you know, like on the mainstream in Britain, you get a lot of, which I don't like, but you get a lot of misogyny, you get a lot of, well, the misogyny probably would go okay. But you get a lot of paedophilia and rape jokes, and that wouldn't go down well.
Yeah.
And they're great audiences, you know. Black audiences are brilliant because they're very warm. So if they find you funny, you really know about it. You know, they really laugh. They give, you know, they're great audiences to perform in front of. They don't tend to drink, so you don't get drunks at black gigs.
That is a blessing.
Yeah.
A blessing. Get it?
Yeah. Very good. Ooh. So you don't get drunk.
You can use that. Oh my, I hate that sentence.
I know. You can have that one.
You can have that one.
So you don't get drunks, and people don't tend to heckle on the black circuit. And I find that black comics and black promoters are really supportive because they don't care that I'm white. They don't care that I'm a woman. They don't care that I'm no spring chicken. All they care about is, are you funny? Can you make my audience laugh? You're booked. And that's not as common a booking policy in Britain as you might think. So they really don't care that I'm, you know, white and a woman. They kind of, in a way, they kind of like it because it's something different.
But in the mainstream circuit, you tend to have problems with that? Do you encounter problems?
I think, yeah, because I think the gatekeepers, if you like, in Britain, it's still a class society in Britain. I don't know what it's like in the Netherlands. So the gatekeepers tend to be middle-class white males who tend to, obviously, you know, everybody's got their own type of humour. So they tend to go for, there's definitely a fashion in Britain, and a lot of comics are getting, you know, make jokes about this, for the young white, generally middle-class guy in tight jeans.
Yeah.
And quaint hairstyle, because they think they're good for TV. So they're good looking and they're good for TV. But the thing with comedy is you know, there shouldn't be a look for comedy. The whole thing about comedy is not that you're good looking. It's the one probably bit of entertainment where it doesn't really matter how you, because you know, in singing you can be a good looking person and not sing,
yeah,
and you can be a megastar.
Well, there's a lot of examples of that. Examples, yeah.
But in comedy, you can be good looking, but if you're not funny.
Yeah,
you can't make a career out of it, and I think that's the problem, is that you've got a lot of people who are trying to look for TV friendly faces, but they might not necessarily come up with the equipment. And you know, there's a lot of funny comics, absolutely hilarious comics that don't get on television.
But
it's probably the same in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
But the problem is now people will only go and really watch people that they've seen on TV.
But that's everywhere. Mm. It's like television is some sort of like magic box that. I remember. Have you been on television?
Yeah, I did. I did Sky News a couple of times, where you know, joked about the news.
But have you? Do you know when people notice that you've been on television?
Yeah,
they think that's like amazing. Whereas,
yeah.
It's actually not that hard to get on television. Mm. But
I don't know about the Netherlands. It probably is in Britain. I think you generally have to be with certain agents in order to get on TV.
Yeah, I mean, like not within a comedy setting,
mm.
but just the whole idea of television, not even comedy setting, but people tend to give television sort of like mystical powers.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, you put that on a poster, people will come. Because the problem is, which is fair enough, if you're an ordinary member of the public, there's some very good comedians that have never been on TV. Someone like Dan Evans has come into my mind. Check him out on YouTube. Fantastic comedian. Roger Monkhouse, John Maloney. There's loads of really good comics. But if you're a member of the public, you don't know.
Yeah.
The problem in Britain is we've got too much comedy. So you've got a night where you can pay £10 and you can see three really good comics, say Steve Carlin, Dan Evans, John Maloney, £10, and you'll have a great night. You can also spend £10 and see a load of open spots who are awful. Yeah. But you, as a member of the public, you don't know that. So if you go to a night where they're not very... some open spots are great, some are rubbish. But if you happen to go to a night where you get... load of open spots, you happen to be awful.
Yeah.
You think, well, you know what? I'm going to save my money and go and see Mickey Flanagan because I've seen him on TV.
Yeah.
He's hilarious, and I know I get a good. And it puts people off. So there's so many bad nights of comedy and so many bad comedians. It puts people off. So I can understand if you're Joe Public, because from the names, you won't know that they're very good.
That's
not.
The thing, right? You can only spend your £10 at one time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So why not choose the one where
you're going to be certain, safe?
Yeah, just safe. But there'll always be people that tend to go for the unknown names, trying to figure out who's new, because everybody wants to be the guy or girl that said, I knew him before he was
famous
or something
yeah.
like that. Even though that's stupid anyway. But yeah, that's you can also have the pearls that you find in a comedy now where six of the comedians suck monkey
and then there's,
chunks.
And there's one guy going like,
oh my God.
Yeah. There's one new guy that is... Because I've been a selector in a sub of competitions, and, you know, you sit through these competitions and you're losing the will to live, because basically, often a lot of the new acts, it's the same act, it's a variation of the theme. And then somebody will come on that's... Because what you tend to remember when you see a lot of comics on one night is the people that's obviously got deranged mental health problems, someone who's really awful, and then someone who just is so different from everyone else. And they're the ones you remember, and everyone else you tend to kind of forget.
But that's always when people start with comedy, they tend to go for the easy jokes,
because
that's the first thing they thought of. But the whole thing about comedy is that
it's finding your voice, isn't it?
What?
I think it's finding your voice.
Yeah, finding your voice, but just skipping the first five jokes that pop in your head, because the sixth joke is funny. And if you say the sixth joke instantaneously, as in the first time, people they can't catch up, which is a good thing. They don't have the feeling that I could have thought of this.
I think the problem is nowadays you've got a lot of people who are coming into comedy, because they think they can make a career out of it. So they think, you know, in a year or 2 years, I'm going to be on TV.
Yeah, I have my own sitcom.
And you know,
I'll be snogging Angelina Jolie by years.
Yeah. And cool. Every now and then, one person will do that. Usually, he's a young, good-looking bloke. But as most comics know, to be a really good comic, it takes years of gigging, doing awful gigs, dying, sitting and performing, or you know, performing in front of other comics who are just looking at you as if they want to kill you. Going up and down the motorway, you know, and it takes years and years of gigging and writing to become very good. And I don't think people realise what a big slog it is. So they see somebody like Mickey Flanagan, who's, I don't know if you know him, he's fantastic.
No, not really.
But, you know, he was an overnight success after about 12, 14 years.
Yeah, that's a famous quote, yeah. I was an overnight success and for 12 years, yeah.
You know, and I saw his show. His show that made him, kicked off his success was in 2007. And I think he'd been going 12, 14 years. And it was fantastic. I mean, I laughed every 30 seconds. But he'd been going on the road. So he had 12, 14 years of material. Yeah. Now you've got people who've been doing comedy for 6 months. And they're doing an hour in Edinburgh. And you're like, what?
What? Yeah.
You know, you haven't even got 5 minutes.
Yeah, try inserting a couple of jokes. I don't know, whatever.
So I think that's part of the problem, that people are trying to be successful too quickly. And I think in comedy, you need to serve your dues. You need to go around the circuit and do all those gigs and, you know, be 3 o'clock on a service station eating a cheese sandwich.
Yeah,
you know,
been there.
It's probably the same in Holland.
It's the same here, but. People don't, Joe Public, like you said, they don't know what goes into that. They figure out, because when you're a sports, famous sports guy, you tend to know, okay, if you want to be that good, you got to train. But for comedy, people, how many times have you got the question, do you have a different act every night? Yeah, sure, I just come up with one and a half hour material every day. That's how good I am.
That is really funny. I remember being at this gig and I was sitting next to somebody in the audience and she went, oh, this guy's doing the same jokes he did last time. And I went, well, wait 20 minutes and I'll be doing the same jokes I did last time. I mean, you do get people who get... All the other things, I compare a lot. And what's really funny when you compare or you MC is you get people coming up to you, like you'll be in the loo and they'll see you and they go, you know what, you should try comedy, you know, because you're really funny. And you're like, that's what I've been doing.
Yeah. But the thing is, do you want Joe Public to know the way it actually goes?
No,
do you want
that's the
to,
whole...
Do you want him to give him the behind-the-curtains look?
No, because that's like the great thing about comparing is that what you tend to do is you tend to... You know, you ask somebody a question, then you can slip a joke...
Yeah.
Segue into a joke. So they just think you thought it up. And that's what it's like dancing. I mean, I remember seeing a clip of Fred Astaire and they didn't like his outfit that he'd worn. So they gave him another outfit and he did the same routine and they put it side by side on the screen. And even his slide was down to the exact second. I mean, yeah. I'm no comic, I don't think we're that precise, but it was amazing because, you know, even something that looked like, you know, just slid.
Yeah.
And the whole thing is when you saw somebody like Fred Astaire, you don't realise the work. You don't. That's the whole thing. You don't realise the work that's got into it. You're meant to make it look like you've just thought. In a way, it's a compliment because people think you just thought that minute. You just thought something.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. The trick is to make it. It takes 10 years to make it look like you've just did it.
But it's
to make it look like it's easy. That's the whole thing that our comedians that they make it look so easy. And people go like. Yeah, sure, I can do that. And then it's
I'm really funny
the
in the pub.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, but that's a pitfall for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Some guy told me I was really funny, so hello, people, wherever the fuck I am.
Yeah.
Do you know my Uncle Joe? Well, he's funny.
I know.
What?
I know. Well, that's it. That's the art of any entertainer, isn't it? Is to make it look easy.
Yeah.
And that actually, you haven't really put any work into it at all.
Well, it depends on the kind of the comedy you do, because the Mitch Hedberg style of comedy, the one-liners, and then people know, okay, this is craft, and he's not making this shit up as we go. But other comedians, the Jerry Seinfelds, the Louis C.K.s, that just go, what's the deal with buses? As if they're thinking about, okay, I'm going to talk about buses. And
so they look like the man in the pub.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. That's
nice. Yeah, people think it's just like being funny in the pub because it looks like being funny in the pub.
Yeah.
Except it's not.
But it's a stagecraft, and it's also being able to work a room, which obviously you only learn from doing
from
horror.
Doing, yeah.
Yeah, and that's, I think, one of the strengths of the British circuit is you play so many different rooms and you gig so much. So it's very funny for me in Germany, you wait to the end of the night and then you do a finale. There's no way you'd get away with that in Britain because the top comedians are probably doing 3-4 gigs a night in London at the weekends.
Yeah.
So they're running from gig to gig. And, you know, you...
What do you mean doing a finale? You play a show...
At the end of the night, you'll go on stage and bow.
Yeah.
In Germany. Which, you know, you'd never do in Britain.
No, a curtain call, yeah. Yeah,
yeah it's
But you actually do another set?
No. When I do Berlin, we do... They call it a mixed show. So you do 10 minutes in the first half, 10 minutes in the second half.
Oh, like that.
Which is very odd. And then you come back on and you do a curtain call.
Yeah.
Which is fine in Germany because you tend to only have that one gig.
Yeah.
But in London, I mean, most comics, they'll turn up, they'll do their gig and they'll go off somewhere else.
Yeah.
Or they'll go home, unless it's a, you know, very good headliner that they want to watch. But, you know, there are comics that will do 3 or 4 gigs a night.
Yeah. You can't do that in Holland.
Yeah, but that's, the advantage of London. I mean, you know, if you're a top comic, I haven't got to that level yet, but they will seriously, if you're earning 200 quid a show...
Yeah.
Or 250 quid a show. You've earned £1,000 on a Friday night and £1,000 on Saturday night. That's, you know, that's a good weekend. I could live with that.
I could live with that, yeah, sure.
But, you know, you're talking about there's not that many comics that are at that level where people want, you know. So in Britain, I think the same as in the Netherlands, there's less work. There's a lot more comics and less work, which isn't a great situation for comics. And so you have comics who, you know, perhaps 2 years ago are doing gigs that they wouldn't have done 2 years ago. So that filters down. So comics at my level are now not getting work because obviously they promoters go, well, I can get so-and-so for this same money.
Yeah.
And so then I'm doing, you know, so it all filters down.
Yeah.
So on the one end, you've got this great big rise of open spots. I work for this promoter. He runs a competition. He's had 650 applicants for this year's competition.
Oh,
650. God. That's new comics.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of. That's just one competition.
They can't all be funny.
Hope not. Well, I'm screwed. And so you've got all these open spots. And so in London, you've got this whole like open mic circuit.
Mm-hmm.
It's a completely different circuit. And then you've got the professional circuit. And so what happens when you become an open mic? And I was the same. Is that you become a very good open mic comic. And so I think all comics are slightly self-deluded. I think you need that to be a comic. So you, when you,
Jesus.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you look a bit, even naked, and
especially naked.
And so you get this idea when you're an open mic night that you're a very good comic, which you are compared to a lot of the other open micers. And it's only when you start doing professional clubs and you start working with really professional comics, some of whom are. I mean, just amazing. The 20 minutes, because in Britain, the 20 minutes tends to be very... There's no flab. It's just joke, 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 joke. And you start working. My first 20 minutes, there was quite a bit of flab. And because like most open micers, my first 20 minutes was like 15 minutes plus 5 minutes added on. So I could say I did 20. And you start gigging with these guys. And then you go, oh, actually, I'm not as good as I thought I was. And then you have to start upping your game.
Yeah.
So I think that's the advantage of the British circuit is that you start working with comics who are so good. I saw Paul Tompkinson recently. I'd never seen him before. Absolutely amazing. And I was bent over double. You know, in comics, we don't tend to laugh. We tend to say, oh, that's really funny. Oh, that's a really good joke.
That's a good joke.
That's a good joke. Oh, I didn't see where it was going there. Yeah, that was really good. But I was bent over double, and I've got a horrendous loud laugh, and I was almost in tears laughing at him. And it is great because you get to gig with these guys, and you just think, right, and I need to up my game. And so my 20 minutes now is very tight because it had to be, otherwise I wouldn't get work.
Is there a goal in England to go on for longer? Is it 20 minutes and then it's the one-woman show?
It depends. I mean, you know, you get certain comics who want to do an hour show and they want to do... I suppose it depends why you're in comedy. Some people just want to pay the mortgage.
Yeah,
so
don't
just
go into comedy if you want to do that.
Well, I mean, you know, there's certain comics who, you know, they get a lot of work and they can get it. I mean, I suppose some want to go on TV, some want to do Edinburgh. I suppose the idea is you do Edinburgh and your show becomes the show that everyone talks about and you become very successful. And it usually happens to one or two comics. But when you think there's about 1,000 plus comics that go up there, most people perform to two people and a dog and don't get many reviews. But you
it's
know,
because the dog can't write.
Yeah, otherwise he probably would have enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So But, you know, there's always the hope, I suppose, that you go to Edinburgh and suddenly you make your name. I suppose it depends what you want from comedy. What do you want from comedy?
I don't know.
Apart from interviewing people like me.
No, the thing is, I did comedy for a long time to get like an affirmation.
Right.
I figured that out not so long ago. But now I attempt to not do a lot of shows, just sporadically. And I'm like, I'm just doing because I want to perform. That's the thing. I'm at a point where I don't want to go perform, do 4 shows, 5 shows in a week anymore. Just I at my job, I do a lot of other comedian funny projects, but not actually doing shows.
Mm.
And I'm fine with that. And every couple of months, maybe whenever if there's an open mic spot in the vicinity, I like, yeah, I'll sign up. I like this. I like this feeling. But the actual mileage,
it's a hard slog.
It's a hard slog, and I'm like, for now, I'm done with it. I'm not saying that I'm not going to come back to that. I don't know. Maybe in 5 years' time, I'm like, yeah, I have a show, an hour show. But the thing is, if you're willing to put in the effort, you can get that booked. I know people say it's very tough to get booked in the theaters, yeah.
Mm.
But you can also create your own theater vibe and just do it, like, for a week. Mm. If you don't need to pay the mortgage with it.
Yeah, okay.
You have a lot of lenience in there. And yeah, that's what I'm sort of like want to do with project-based. That's the thing. Because with comedy in Holland, I don't know how that is in Britain, but... we don't have a lot of comedy cafes.
In
Amsterdam has a few. Utrecht has none. When you think about it, we had one sort of, but it stopped. And across Holland, it's not a lot. So it's mostly in theaters. And when you're in theaters, you have to compete with the musicals, with the theater productions, with the professional whatevers.
It's like Germany, I think. Because Germany, I think a lot of people, the comics, make their livings from one-man shows. And in Britain, I think people, if you're a certain level, if you're like Mickey Flanagan level, you can make a killing from doing tours. But there'd be no point me going on a tour because, you know, I'm not a name. I don't know how many people would come and see me, apart from in London and Birmingham and Leicester, maybe. I might get a few people. And Dundee, that'd be it. But, I don't know. I mean, I do enjoy performing. I mean, when you rip it, there's no feeling like it when you storm
killing
a gig.
Killing it. But why do you do comedy?
Because it's easier than temping, which is what I used to do. Shorter hours. I was never into comedy at all, and it was about 7-8 years ago. I was very depressed, and I was talking to a friend, but through my tears, I kept cracking jokes. I was really, really depressed, but I kept cracking jokes about it all.
Well, that's a definition of any comedy.
Yeah, and she was like, you should do stand-up. And I was like, no. I'd been to one stand-up thing, I think, in the 80s. And a friend had dragged, and I actually quite enjoyed it, but that was it. I'd never, ever gone to anything comedy-wise. And she thought, you should do stand-up. I was like, no, no, no. And she just basically badgered me until I went and signed up on this course. And I was actually very good at it. I was the best. I mean, it was a very low level. It wasn't like I was with Eddie Izzard or somebody, but it was very... But I was the best. I enjoyed it. And I did my first 5 minutes, and I was funny. And I remember the first joke I got a real laugh. And I went, I like this.
This
is nice.
Sensation.
And then the second gig I did, I died, but and I was going to give up. My family, oh, don't be daft. She's got to carry on. But it's a nice way of earning money. I do enjoy performing. I hate the travelling. Like last week, I was in the Midlands. This week, of course, I travelled to Holland, and then I get back, and then I'm off to Berlin. So you're constantly always travelling, and you know, staying in hotels and stuff like that. That I don't enjoy. But the actual performing, I really do enjoy, and I MC a lot, and I've got a few clubs where I'm the resident MC, and so it's more like I'm chatting to friends.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because everybody's in on the joke, and it's great because, like in Birmingham where I've run a gig, I try all my new material, and they find me whatever I say is hilarious, and then you go somewhere else, and they just look at you. But it's
who's Roger? You're talking about this. Who's Roger?
But it's you know, in a gig like that, the Birmingham gig, it's so nice to do, or the London gig even. It's just a ball. The comics have a ball. The audience have a ball. They're all female comedy nights, so the atmosphere is slightly different. And it's just a lot. It's just fun from beginning to end. It's just like a fun night. Because sometimes in London you're performing in front of a bunch, you know, it's a horrible evening, you know, you're just firefighting, you're not really telling any jokes, you're calling somebody a slag, somebody else something else, because you're just there, just a load of drunks. So it's actually really nice being in an environment where everybody just wants to have fun. And it's a real laugh. And because I pick the comics, I know who to pick, who is right for my audience.
Yeah, that is the cool part when you're actually a resident MC that does the organizing. When you have a specific place where you go, just one, yeah.
Because that's the thing. It's the trick, I think, for any comedy club is knowing your audience and knowing what comics suit your audience.
Yeah.
And I think that's where a lot of clubs go wrong, because they pick comics that are completely wrong for the audience. And you're just thinking,
it's comedy, right?
Yeah, and it's just like, that's never going to work. And you see sometimes the comics they pick and you're like, and they think the comic's great, which is fine, but if the audience don't...
Yeah, that's the biggest problem for a lot of... But with any business, is don't go by your own... it depends on what you do, of course.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
your own judgment doesn't have to be the judgment of the target audience.
I mean, luckily, my audience is basically similar tastes, because it tends to be women, tends to be slightly older women, and lesbians for some reason. So I got, because it's all female comedy, we get a lot of lesbians in, and so we tend to like the same kind of things in a way. So it's actually quite good, because I enjoy the comics as well. So it means that there's quite a few female comics I can't book because they wouldn't go down well with my audience.
Yeah.
Because, you know, either they do misogynist material, which wouldn't go down well with me either, or it's just the material just wouldn't work with that kind of crowd. So I'm kind of limited in a way, because I only book female comics, and then I can only book a certain amount of female comics within that spectrum.
But how long have you been doing comedy now?
Since about 2005.
Well, that's not even that long.
No, but I don't know, I make a living from it, which is nice.
That's what I wanted to ask. You don't have an other job besides this?
No. I did. When I first started, I actually got made redundant more or less the same time as I started comedy.
Timing.
Yeah, and I was a temp, and I've been there so long, I actually got redundancy pay. Yes.
My God, woman.
I've been there about 9 years as a temp. I was there longer
nine
than most.
As a temp?
Yeah, I was longer there. I was the longest serving employee. It's quite funny.
As a temp.
Yeah. Yeah.
Temp stands for temporary, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, just checking. Yeah.
And then I ended up getting work for the company that made me redundant. I was actually doing translations, technical translations from French into English on things like dewatered sludge. It was fascinating.
So what now?
Dewatered sludge.
Yeah, I just nod. Yeah, dewatered sludge, yeah. Sure.
And then I ended up working for the Catholic Church, typing up 19th century French letters by a French nun. During the Franco-Prussian War, as you do.
Yeah, sometimes.
And it was cross-writing, which is very difficult because the paper was very expensive in those days. So they would write in French, they'd write one way, they'd turn the paper around and then write over the writing. So you had to read underneath the writing and then read the writing on the top.
What year is this when paper was expensive?
1819.
But I don't get what you got.
So you write a letter, so you write on a letter, then you turn the paper around. And then you write across the writing.
Oh, stuff like that. Oh, okay, I know.
So I had to type all that up for the
French Catholic
Church.
And you go, I need glasses.
So I had that, and I thought that was like a week's work, and that lasted about 2-3 years. She wrote a lot of letters. And that was going all to the Vatican. So that kind of kept me going. And then luckily, when that work dried up, my comedy took off. And so I lived from comedy.
But are you religious?
No, I'm Presbyterian, so we're not Catholic at all, but that didn't stop me taking the work.
No, but you also talked about the black circuit and people going to church.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, maybe, you know.
No, Church of Scotland.
The Church of Scotland, that has to do with fighting, right?
No. Church of Scotland is very Protestant, so for us the Church of England is very Catholic. It's Calvinistic. It's kind of very strict Protestant. What's Protestant Dutch? Because the Dutch are mainly Protestants, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm surely I don't,
you don't know.
Know. They're Protestant and Catholics. They're Calvinistic.
I think you're Calvinistic, I'm sure.
Who,
I don't know.
Who, me?
Yeah, you.
Yeah.
Sitting there naked.
Yeah. No, that's
looking
Calvin
like
Klein.
Jesus.
That's in the corner. No, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if anything were religion, but yeah. But you've been at it since 2005.
Mm-hmm.
you're pretty successful now.
Well, I make a living from it.
Well, let's consider that successful. But have you got any other goals? Have you had your own one-woman show?
I did a preview for it on Monday.
Nice.
I'm doing my next preview in Berlin, obviously, as the leading Austrian-German black lesbian comic.
As they tend to do.
Selbstverständlich, as we'd say in German. Selbstverständlich.
Und auf Internet in über Französisch.
Ja, eh klar. Also. Keine Ahnung, was du mir gesagt hast. Yeah. But
super.
So I'm doing that, and then I'm taking that up to Edinburgh. I don't know really what my ambitions are. It's probably why I'm not getting anywhere. I don't know. I wouldn't mind doing some acting as well. I used to do some acting before. I was in Band of Brothers, episode 9.
Seriously?
You went there for that conversation. I'm angry German woman in episode 9 of Band of Brothers.
No way.
Yeah, but that's the Daphne Fasan. That's me.
I'm angry woman number 7.
I'm written down as German Hausfrau. It was great because I had an audition and they had to test my German, but nobody spoke German apart from me. There was a slight flaw in their plan.
And then you can say, I listen to myself. I'm actually really good.
But I just said, well, how are you going to test my German? Oh, well, we'll be able to tell. I mean, I do speak fluent German, so luckily. But I got the part, and I got a present from Tom Hanks as well because he was the producer of the
Nice.
Present and a letter from Tom Hanks.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Why? He
gave it to everybody. It wasn't just me.
I'm going like,
I know.
Dear Maureen.
Yeah. No, I don't think I don't know. He gave it to everybody in the car. And everybody in the cast and crew, Band of Brothers, got a bomber jacket from Tom Hanks. And a thank you. Thank you for that artistry.
That is kind of cool. Yeah.
But I remember being in the post office and I opened this part. I was like, what is this parcel? And I said to the guy in the post office, oh, I've got a letter from Tom Hanks. He just went, yeah.
Yeah.
And so I go, no, it's really from Tom Hanks. And he just, I mean, you wouldn't believe anybody, would they? Go, I've just got a letter from Tom Hanks. So I've got a letter which is on my wall. I think it was computer generated, to be honest. But, you know, it's still the thought that counts. So, yeah, I'm in episode 9.
Is it hand printed?
No, unfortunately not. But so I'm episode 9. Have you seen an angry German woman of episode 9 of Band of Brothers? That's me.
I'm gonna YouTube the shit out of that.
I had an audition with Christopher Guest as well last year.
Yeah.
Do you know from Spinal Tap?
Yeah. This goes to 11.
Yes, that's right. That was nice. He was a very nice guy. But I didn't get the part, unfortunately.
What kind of part was it?
It was a recurring guest role, so it would have been nice. It was a Moldavian woman. Because I speak Russian. So sure. Russian and Moldavian.
Why not?
Russian and Moldavian aren't really that similar, but I didn't...
Czech.
I didn't point... Do you speak Czech?
Yeah.
Why? How come you speak Czech?
Because you speak Russian. No, no, my mother is Czech.
Ah, I don't speak any Czech.
No, but like when you say Russian, they're probably when you. I understand.
Ulica is like the same in Czech, isn't it? Because I recognize that from when I was in Prague. I tried to speak Russian to them, but it didn't go down very well.
No, but because they know it's Russian, but they can't understand some words.
So I spoke German to them. So
yeah,
but yeah,
everybody Nemetsky.
Because I was in Slovenia, and there was a thing on because I could understand quite a bit of Slovenian because it's very similar to. Russian, they had something like Nemetsky, and I thought, oh, it was Germans in Slovenia, so we went to the exhibition. But he was very funny.
So German, so that was an execution. The what?
No, the German.
I heard.
Funny enough, the Germans got kicked out of Slovenia. The German speakers got kicked out of Slovenia after the war. Weird that. We had this. I had to go for this role as a Moldavian because I speak Russian, even though Moldova and Russia not really very similar. But again, I didn't really point that out at the audition.
Because there's nobody there that can speak Russian again.
Or Moldavian.
It's the same casting people as Band of Brothers. It's super easy.
But he was really nice, really nice guy. And I had also an audition with Ricky Gervais. Again, very nice.
Ricky Gervais, I have an opinion.
Well, what's your opinion?
His laugh. I just get the hype. I'm like, oh, dude, that's so annoying.
I'm sure it's not that high-pitched, is it?
Oh, seriously? Try listening to his podcast. Or with Idiot Abroad.
I've never really watched that, yeah.
Oh my God, that... I don't know, I think he looks kind of arrogant. I know he's a great TV maker, but he got, quote-unquote, famous so fast that he didn't have time to adjust, kind of thing. So he started doing stand-up after his television thing. And like you said, when you're on TV... So, it was
Some of the
sold out.
Yeah, but some of the stand-up was very good, though, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. It's not really my type. But what did you do with Ricky then?
It was an audition for Derek, and he had to act with him. But he, you know, he's clearly very good at what he does.
Yeah.
You know, and very spot on. And we were talking about, because I gig in German, so he's quite fascinated by the fact that I gig in another language. And he wanted to know, is it really cultural references? And I said, well, the other thing, you know, the Germans tend to have very physical humour, which I think is also in the Netherlands as well.
You have slapstick some of and... it depends. We also have a lot of, you could say clowning. Waving the finger, kind of egalitarian. Stored herself in front. This is wrong. You should. Go to Paris. Live life and blah blah blah.
Yeah, okay.
We tend to have a lot of that.
Sounds
well.
Funny.
Hilarious.
But I mean, like I gig with this guy in Berlin, and this, you could not do this in Britain because race. You could not do this because you'd be considered racist. He puts clothes pegs in his eyes, so his slitty eyes.
No way.
Yeah, and he puts on Chinese music, and you can't see this on radio. He kind of goes, hey hiya.
And this is in Germany?
This is in Germany, and the Germans killed themselves laughing. Now, Ricky was killing himself laughing, because I went, you seriously could not do that in Britain. You just could not do that in Britain.
No.
And Ricky, I said, perhaps you could do that in your next episode of Derek. He went, yeah, but you'd have to be ironic, which actually is very funny, because in Britain, everyone gets away with going, being really misogynist or whatever, going, being ironic, when of course they're not. So that was hilarious. He just found that really hilarious, that, you know, in Germany, you've got this guy. He seriously does it, and it gets massive laughs.
How can
clothes pegs?
And what way can you get away with that?
Could you get away with that in Holland?
No.
In Britain, you definitely couldn't. Seriously, it's really funny because the Germans are laughing and the Brits are just watching, going, "I can't believe you're doing that."
Oh
my
god! Well, that's a really
American. That's American.
Yeah. Oh my god!
Britain were going, "I'm fucking hell! We just can't believe that."
Look at
the
daft fucking hippie.
You just can't believe that somebody's doing that.
That's weird stuff.
Because race is definitely a very sensitive subject in Britain. Because I was talking to Isaac Janssen, who I don't know who you saw yesterday.
Yeah. I didn't see him.
He was brilliant, absolutely fantastic. It's hard to believe that English is his second language. It was excellent. And he was saying he tried to do a race joke, which is actually an anti-racism joke. And the atmosphere just went...
Bam.
Bam.
It depends here on what the context is. And if you have if you have persuaded the audience that you want to take them onto a journey with you, I don't know how to.
I think in most comedy, you can get away with anything if they like you enough.
Yeah.
So if you've warmed them up, it's, you know, there's jokes that I would do in the middle of my set, so on the black circuit that I wouldn't if I did at the beginning. People just go, "What the fuck?" But if people kind of, if you're on their wavelength, they like you. You can get. I mean, I remember doing a Christian comedy night where I wasn't allowed to swear or talk about sex. Which was interesting. I had to practice not swearing. And there was a guy...
Fuck, I got laid. Oh, shit. God damn it. Oh!
There was a gay guy who was closing. He was a very funny guy called Chris Neal. And halfway through the gig, and I was bent over double laugh, and tears were rolling down my eyes. He's so funny. And halfway through he went, yes, because he's clearly very camp. And he went, yes, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking I'm middle class. I'm also a bender, but that's besides the point. But because...
Bender is home...
A gay.
Yeah.
But because the audience loved him so much, they didn't care.
Yeah.
But obviously he said that at the beginning of his set, and that's obviously where new comics go wrong, because they'll start off... I saw this young comic, and it was a very middle-aged audience who weren't drunk, very sober, couples, and he started talking about his girlfriend's vagina. That was the first joke, and of course, lost the audience immediately.
Well, seriously, those kind of topics... When a comedian starts with that, I'm like, this is...
I know,
this is
but it's a new comic.
Easy way out.
It's a new comic.
Even for comedians who've done this longer, if that's their type of material, I don't... it can be clever, but it's...
But also, you know, if that's the opening joke, and it's fine if your thing is what you get is a lot of... I did this competition, I emceed a competition for these young comics... And they weren't performing in front of their friends or other young men of the 20s. They were performing in front of grown-ups.
Yeah.
So, of course, they went on. And if they do this material in front of other 20-year-olds, 20-year-olds find it hilarious. Of course, they go in front of people who are 30, 40. They're just sitting there going, what the fuck are you on about?
Yeah.
And you could see from their faces, they were going, well, why is no one laughing?
Why isn't this working?
Yeah, because they're just not used to performing in front of...
Can they see me?
But do you know what I mean? It's that kind of thing. I mean, one of the worst ever acts I had to follow was this young guy in a competition who did 5 minutes about mutilated vaginas. This is not even a joke.
Why would you? No, it's not even the joke. Funny choice of words.
Yeah. But he obviously thought it was funny. He was some 20-year-old. He must have been slightly drunk. And he'd gone to the trouble of printing A3 pictures of various mutilated vaginas. And they were entitled,
in what world would that be considered?
Called Spewing Chunks was the title of one of them, right?
And I don't want to know.
He was showing these, and the audience were basically in their 30s, 40s, very middle class. So they were sitting there going, what the fuck? And I had to follow him. That was who I had to follow. And me and this other female comic were going, what the fuck? And, you know.
So go on. I have some prints ready of mutilated dicks.
But, you know, he obviously, him and his mates would have thought it was hilarious. But then obviously performing in front of other people, everyone just goes.
Yeah.
He called them flanges, so he thought that would get a laugh. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But, you know, that's the thing when you see new comics, is you've got to learn to play the room. And then once they like you, you can often get away with anything.
Yeah, but it, like I said before, you shouldn't do the first joke that comes to mind. You have to do the 6 jokes. So if the first one is mutilated vaginas, let's see what the 6th joke is that
I don't think they put that much effort into it.
Yeah, but that's a thing. And that's what beginners have, is they don't put the effort in to actually make an original creative joke. Did you have that yourself when you started you were going for...
I had loads of material, actually, which I didn't write down. I remember her saying to me, write it down, and I didn't bother, and I forgot it all. So, because I think, because I started quite, when I was quite more, was older than a lot of people, and I've done lots of things, and I think my view on life is quite different. So, because, you know, I came on the back of feminism, I've lived abroad a lot, I've done different things. I don't think I'm a very stereotypical female, in a way that a lot of... people are, you know, women are supposed to be like. And so,
because you got 5 arms, I noticed.
And I'm a black lesbian, no.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But I don't act in a very, very stereotypical way. I remember this African guy tried to mug me in Paris and I punched him in the face.
Well, seriously, why doesn't this surprise me? I don't know why, but it doesn't surprise me.
But it surprised him because he didn't. You know what I mean?
I bet it did.
Because men don't expect women to go on the attack. And I just went. And he was going up the stairs and I was going down, so I had the momentum with me. So I just punched him in the face and he fell back. If he'd been a bloke, he probably would have expected me to do something. I remember this other guy when it was in Paris again, walking home late at night. I'd just seen some 3 Austrian movies, as you do late at night. And this guy came up to me and went, are you scared? I went, no. He went, oh, and he walked off. Which was hilarious. You know,
no, are you? Need a hand, little man?
It's like my mother, which is a true story. My mum was in Moscow at the age of 69, travelling around the world, as you do at 69.
Yeah.
And this young girl took her purse out of her bag, and my mum turned round. My mum's Scottish, by the way. Grabbed her by the throat, throttled her, threw her to the floor, called her a cunt, and took her purse back. That is a
69.
69. I swear to God, that's a true story.
I think I just fell in love with your mother.
You know, and it was hilarious. And it's because if you know my mum, and it's so funny because, you know, I tell people that who know my mother, and they kind of go, my mum, because I told my best friend, I went, oh, somebody tried to mug my mother, and they went, oh, they didn't, did they? And he really felt sorry for the mugger. And I know what my mum's like because, you know, you see this old woman, and it's hilarious because she does the door for me. She's my bouncer at my comedy nights because no one gets past her.
This is hilarious.
Seriously, they've met her. Frank's met her. She was here last time I was at Utre. She was drunk. But anyway, she's the bouncer. And some guy went up to her and he went, I really don't like the fact that your daughter swears on stage. And my mum went, oh, fuck off. his face was hilarious. It was hilarious because, you know, she's 75 years old. So people don't expect people to swear like that. She went, oh, fuck off. And it was like...
Oh my god, that's awesome.
It's so funny. And then being at a party with her, and this I was in another room, apparently this guy was slagging me off and she had a right go at him. She's Scottish. And then as he walked out of the room, he went, oh, Maureen's mum has made me look like a cunt. And apparently she was there with a fag in one hand, rum and coke in the other, going, I haven't made you look like a cunt. You are a cunt! So I don't think any of the women in my family are very stereotypical.
Or subtle.
Or subtle, no. Subtlety is not one of our strong points. But I think that's kind of nice because then you're not playing to that. I'm quite ballsy on stage. And so I don't think I'm what people expect. Like, people don't tend to heckle me in Britain. People don't tend to. No, but they don't.
I'm gonna deck you if you do.
No, I mean, I remember once this black guy heckled me at Choice FM, which is a black comedy night. And I just went, into him. And it's great, the black audience is hilarious, because they just were going, brap, 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 brap. And they were like, stamping their feet for 5 minutes. I think I'm getting paid for this. Because the audience just wouldn't, they were just pissing themselves laughing. And then I got a joke, and I made him the butt of the joke. And over again, it was like, brap, 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 and all this. And it was hilarious. I can't do the noise well. And, you know, and it was so funny, because he didn't think I was going to say anything. It's like, of course I'm going to fucking say something. So it's great, because I really don't tend to get heckled, because people just think, you know what, I'll just wait for the next comic. Because, you know, but I like the fact, I think it's great that you've got women that are ballsy and strong. And I really get annoyed when I see female comics who do, I'm a pathetic female.
The guy that I did the comedy duo with, mm-hmm. for a couple of years, we had a name for that, and it's called Menstruatie Cabaret.
Right.
And it's like menstruation comedy, because I have it so hard, and men are so not nice to women. I'm like, there has to be a more original thing say than this.
Mm.
So... But what does your mother think of you? Do you get the ballsiness from your parents?
I think so, and also because I was one of the few white girls at a black school,
mm-hmm.
so I went to a school where, you know, some of the people weren't that nice. So you like
defend yourself.
So you know, when you get like some middle-aged white guy trying to intimidate me, I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake! I remember this guy was trying to interrupt me at this middle-class gig, and I was like, look, mate. So my family's Scottish. I grew up, went to a really rough school in North London. You're a middle-class bloke. What are you going to do? Threaten me with a rolled-up copy of The Guardian? Oh, the horror. You know, and it is, it's like, you know, it's, do you know what I mean? Compared to that, you just think, what the fuck are you going to do? It's like, I don't know.
I've got the thing in my head that you go to that school and find, who's the baddest motherfucker in this town? And then stab him. Go like, yeah, this is my turf
now. No, I'm not that bad. But I just, you know, I don't knowingly, I think because I've got quite a strong persona without realising it.
Mm.
I mean, when I was younger, I used to really argue with, I've always been called assertive. And I used to argue with people and go, I'm not assertive. And I would argue with them until they backed down, which
and
is hilarious.
And I do not know what irony is.
Yeah, yeah. So I seriously did not know. So I would have these arguments with people going, I'm not assertive. And I would carry on arguing with them until they agreed with me. And I have no idea that I was actually, you know, it's hilarious. So I don't think I'm assertive, but, you know, But then I know I am.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember once this guy, I was on the bus and the bus was packed and the tubes weren't working. So it was chronic in London. And he had his shopping on the seat. I went, can you move your shopping, please? I went, nothing doing. I think it was Middle Eastern. So he probably thought I should be behind the bus or something. And he said nothing. He was just really arrogant. He went, nothing doing. What do you mean nothing? He went, nothing doing. I went, right, I'll sit on it then. And I sat on his shopping. And I'm quite a big woman. So obviously food shopping and me, I'm going to win. You know, there's no way, you know, shopping's going to win. And so he moved his shopping. You see, and I suppose that is assertive, but it's like, I'm not standing up for a bag of shopping. It's not, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's, and I remember once, like, people have tried to push in front of me in the queue, which, of course, in Britain is worse than murder. And I remember
the British do like to queue.
We like to queue. And this woman, she was claiming she couldn't speak English, which is bollocks. I'm thinking, whatever country you come from, if you arrive last, you do not go to the front of the queue. I mean, there's no country in the world. And I kept going, get to the back. And she refused. And she went straight to the front of the queue. And I went up there and I threw her stuff. I just whacked it on the floor. And I went, you're not pushing in. And she went, no problem. I went, there is a problem. We've pushed in. I thought, you're not doing it.
Yeah.
And I sound like a psychotic nutter, don't I? But I was just like, you're not pushing in front of me. It's not happening.
Yeah.
So I just walked and went, not happening. And I just threw her stuff off the counter. So moral of the story is don't push in front of... We get really... It's like, I remember these Germans did it once. They pushed in front of me and they pretended they couldn't speak English. And I just answered back in German and went... Well, you're not blind. Get to the back of the queue.
Oh, that's awesome.
We hate that.
Hello. Someone is miming.
Yes, yeah. What's the matter, Britt?
I just want to tell you that dinner has been delayed till 7:30, so if you want to eat something in advance,
okay.
Grab something.
She knows me very well.
Yes.
She just want me to start to fight.
Need food.
The last 5 minutes has made me sound like a right nutter, isn't it?
No, we're not even... Okay. The next 5 minutes?
I'll talk about how I want to collect world peace.
But what do you... But how do your parents look at it? Especially your mum, she's the bouncer at your comedy.
Yeah.
So she must be proud of you doing the comedy. How does that... How does that work?
Well, yeah, but she wouldn't really tell me. I think she tells other people. Like, I remember once I did a play in Berlin,
mm-hmm.
and she told the guy that I had the smallest role. It was the best role, but it was the smallest role. She told the guy that I was the focal point in the play, which I wasn't, and that the playwright had rewritten the play around me, which was interesting because Noel Coward had died 40 years earlier. So she slightly exaggerates stuff, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I remember once when I was doing the thing for Spielberg, it was the Tom Hanks thing,
yeah.
Spielberg as well, and she's on the phone and she was going, oh, so you're doing the Tom Hanks Spielberg, and it was obviously for the benefit of
for the people standing
next to it. It wasn't for me because I knew what I was doing, and it was really...
Did Tom get the package I sent?
Yeah, so I think she kind of... And like, my dad has never seen my act.
No,
because my dad is very old school Scottish, so I'm not allowed to swear in front of him, and of course I've never had sex because I've never been married.
Yeah,
and,
of course you haven't.
Yeah, and so my dad is a very old school Scotsman, and he's very gruff, and he also thinks I'm called Mavis. I'm not.
What? What?
And he thinks I'm called Mavis. I'm not. What? My name is more, because he can't remember my name.
Your dad. That is weird.
So he always calls me, he goes, this is my daughter, Mavis, and I'm going, no, it's no, Maureen, it's Dad.
Not, yeah.
So I thought if he ever came and saw me on stage, he'd just be at the back going, Mavis! Mavis!
No!
There's no need for that language. And everybody going, there's some mental Scotsman shouting at an imaginary woman called Mavis. Because he's very tall and gruff and he's got a great big beard and very Scottish.
Cool.
And I remember I was on Sky News, which is like massive. And I phoned him up from the car because I was really chuffed. You know, I was on, you know, international television. And I said, oh, Dad, what do you think? He went, yes, well, Mavis, because an hour before you go on, they go, coming up, comedian Maureen Younger. So you get that for the whole hour before you go on air. He went, what do they keep mentioning your name for? Because nobody knows who you are. I'm thinking, well, you don't, for starters. Do you know what I mean?
That is weird that your dad doesn't...
No, he seriously think... I don't know why he just keeps calling me Mavis.
But you can prove that, right?
Like, my name is Maureen. Yeah, no, he knows. In a way, he knows it's Maureen. But I'll just go, this is Mavis. And you're like, it's Maureen, Dad. It's because people don't believe it's true. But it's you know, because a comic came and visited him. Met him with me. And he went, and he kept calling me Mavis. And she was... Because she just thought it was just a joke that I'd written. But it's true. He does think I'm called Mavis. He's really shit with names.
That's amazing.
It's a bit like... Have you ever watched Only Fools and Horses?
Oh, back in the day.
Well, there was that... You know, Trigger always called him... I can't remember what he called him. Always called him the wrong name.
Yeah.
But that's the same thing as my dad. It's just... He's really rubbish with names. Well, particularly
including his daughter's name. Yeah, that makes sense.
So anything else? We've been talking for ages.
Yeah.
How long has it been?
55 minutes.
See, a comic talking about themselves, they find it very difficult.
I like it, Mavis. Thanks for the talk.
Okay, thank you.
En dat was aflevering 37 alweer van Comedy Geek met Maureen Younger dit keer. Een hele toffe vrouw, knettergek, lekker maf en met prachtige absurde verhalen. En het was een cool gesprek, het was erg lachen. Wat valt er verder nog vertellen over Comedy Geek? Nog niet zoveel op het moment. Ik neem even een kleine pauze. Het is tenslotte vakantie en anders dan wordt het allemaal heel onhandig. Niet in de laatste plaats omdat ik nog geen nieuwe afleveringen heb opgenomen. Dus dat moet ook allemaal gebeuren. Maar iedereen is op vakantie, dus dat is een beetje onhandig. Maar dat maakt niet uit. De dingen zijn toch niet actueel, dus we houden de moed er lekker in. En ik verwacht ergens in september weer verder te gaan. Dus daar even een paar korte afleveringetjes nu. Ik heb sowieso het idee dat het hele idee van seizoenen niet echt gaat werken. Het is meer een sporadisch iets. Er moet wel een regelmaat in. Maar ik denk dat het meer in blokken gaat worden. Ik moet eventjes kijken hoe het uitkomt. Het heeft allemaal te maken met tijd. Ik heb een beperkte hoeveelheid tijd. Ik doe daarnaast nog 10 miljoen miljard andere dingen. En ik wil dit wel blijven houden. Dus we moeten even kijken. Dus ik zie jullie graag in september weer terug. En tot die tijd, ga naar facebook.com/gavechat en like die pagina. Want daar wordt ook op gemeld wanneer de nieuwe afleveringen komen. En... daar vind je nog veel meer dingen van de dingen die ik doe. Maar niet alleen de dingen die ik doe, maar ook de dingen die ik tof vind. Als ik iets cools vind op het internet, dan plaats ik dat daar. En ik ben nogal vrij goed in het internet. Ik zit erop als het ware. Dus het zijn niet de standaard dingen. Dus mocht je dat soort dingen nou leuk vinden, hou je van gave shit. Like dan gave shit op facebook.com/gave shit. En dan zie ik jullie daar. En mochten jullie nou verzoekjes hebben van dingen, gasten waarvan jullie zoiets hebben van, ja, die is heel tof. Die wil ik dat je daar een keertje langs gaat. Laat het me weten. Het handigste is via die Facebookpagina. Dus let me know. Of mocht je contacten hebben met mensen die, waarvan je denkt van, ja, die is handig. Laat het me weten. Dus ik zou zeggen, tot september. Geniet van de vakantie. Doe alles wat je wil en geniet ervan. En dan zie ik jullie in september weer terug. Later.